ကောင်းတဲ့နဲ့နန်ကြောကြဝမ်ဆိုမလာရဲပါကောင်းတဲ့စလာကောင်းတဲ့စနေကွန်ဂျေပကပ်ဆိုနာရုပန်ဂျုံလာဇံတော်ဂျန်ဒေတော့နာဆိုနန်ကင်မလာရဲပါဇံတော်ဂျာဘတ်ချပစ်စေနာရုပန်ဂျုံကြီးချူလန်ဒတန်ဇာချူလန်ဒတာဇာတန်ဇံတော်ယုံဂျုံချင်းကိုင်းစီတေပေ Tene tsartan tsarji jumsen de sombare. Tsartan tsarji jumsen yuna. Tawa, gomba, choba, choba, tamse, deva, tamse, nyamnyen te tawa, yukuba yino.
The story of this song is that the Lord of Yogi Shambhava went on pilgrimage to Mount Kailash. And there he met the vulnerable adept, his name was Naro who challenged Milarepa to a contest of miracles with Mount Kailash as the prize. They had a very long contest, and finally Narupunchum conceded defeat. And after that, he asked Milarepa, how can you be so powerful? What are the sources of your power? And Milarepa said to him, I have many sources of power. I have the view, meditation, conduct, fruition, samaya, and practice that all give me great power. And here are the reasons why. And then he sang this song.
Sing a song.
There's a whole lot of power in my view. Free
can I count up that? Yeah, long count up.
Consider that.
There's
a whole lot of power here in the heart of one Savior from the very sun. There's a whole lot of power in my meditation. I'm excited and reference free. There's a whole lot of power is what I
No.
So now, for the sake of limitless numbers of sentient beings, we will set about accomplishing Buddhahood, complete awakening. And to do that, it is very important to know the subject of phenomena and everything that goes with that, as well as pure being, which is the complete transcendence of all forms of misery. So to clear this up, we will now look at the defining characteristics of pure being in detail.
Chungorwa dene, megin the nama, nangin the tongba, tongin the nama, nandong yer maba, yumadawo, malandawo. Takchatavo Mayuratavo Chuddatavo Turbatavo Zungindavo Rabdo Hebaranzoje.
Phenomena are that which has no existence. They have no existence and yet appear. While appearing, they do not exist. They are empty while appearing, and appearing while empty, and are therefore the union of appearance and emptiness, just like an illusion, like a dream, like an echo, like a mirage, like a miraculous manifestation or emanation, like
Chudata.
Like a reflection of the moon in water.
Chunyin yang ilin da bane. Satong Yermap, Yenre Yermap, Sambatan Jepe Yolende by Hibersa.
Pure being, one must know, is beyond speech and thought. It is luminosity, emptiness, inseparable, which cannot be expressed in words or grasped through thought.
Dele talam ta chudan chunyi jebar kebale chud jebar ke sende nyeba chunyi jebar kebala domjun dordan badan Domje don jebari jeba Nile tambone Namba toke chuni la Jovala namabad Seni kondo nebada Nebar jeda rebada Jesu treda tedani Never sonla jobe so Hisava sonla De don Deke Don namba toke Chuni Lan, Jokwa Lan Mabate, K Kangi don drogbo te kongdo chui na hina namzangi chu maluba dela to kongdo chupanjiro. Dizero, de kangi na chuni je chuni ke barzavada chuni te je ne sam ye ne do churbao yana chuni te ne yana chuni ते मैं गा गाना कौन तो नेबा नेबा ती ये दां ते ने बन जिम्बा दां चुनी जे तोला वन सुम तो रिक्वा दां तो बां लड़ियां ते ने यंग ने यंग तो जीज जिम्बा दां चुनी ते दानी तो निवर जिम्बा योंसो चुपन तोर जिम्बा तो जुबा तो चोकिसो
Having now considered
Chutan Chuni number in Japan, Arangan San, Lobjon, San Mambo Zovare, Yang Yenda Lion, Saka Ye, San Mambo Hebare, then Tanda Yang Lotsava Korange, Jurvare, Tisena, the Ninga Tanda, Sava than Drive Long Sam Jamado, Riki Jagamare, Tele Lagre, Tene Korange, Jeba Dugu Bata, Duba Jegu Bata, Deje Gubata Muguba, Kandeo. Kande Yimba Koran Hakore, Koran de Hizogre, Yang Malarebe Long Daja Wanga, Sam Mamba Hiz, Kashi Malarebe Long Daja, the Sutam Jetini, the Cups of Papa La Guba Yuna Korange, Yang Malarebe Long Yang Higri.
The translator studied this text with me, distinguishing phenomena and pure being on more than one occasion. And after that, he has also taught it to others himself several times and translated it himself. And so he knows the text very well. And that is why what I'm going to do is continue to give the reading transmission and he will give the explanation. He knows what extensive parts can be summarized and what concise parts need to be explained more fully. And also when I explained this text to him, I quoted many times from the songs of the Lord of Yogis Milarepa, and so he might choose to bring those in also when he is giving this explanation to you. But in short, he knows exactly how to explain it to you, so I'm going to let him do that.
Lama kama heba, lotava kama buhe in the window. Young lame labate lamazo. To do my something.
So don't have the thought then, why is the translator talking so much more than the lama? And don't have the thought, it seems that the translator didn't say something that the lama said.
Kahi samon to kavate so dehe, mambo gogodo, londa jagodo. Kahi injike la ko lavo tezo go, kanga gogumudo dun and degendo de, lotava koranzo hakogre.
Some parts that are treated of briefly in the text are quite profound and therefore require more explanation. Other parts may be long, but once they get translated into English, they are clear and easy to understand, so they don't require more explanation. And on both of these different types, the translator knows which is which.
Deda lazo.
Like that.
Nimba domje tong yin. Chokpo te sosri keba la tangbo. Chenyin donne jeda yin. Chenyin namzangin chenyin di kankhena. Kondon dor du de tenbe. Kapso, te yinyi, zonwa so, yedan trawar ne, tenba chetawar, kibarzao.
The expanded explanation of these six.
Zeto kibati. Ne ne juza, kunzange dube, shizu chu tamje, kizu chu nam, tamje dan. Jesus sona vena choni je tebe do te tam je yimban do do ki sir kana chu tam je la tani do lan do la sob chotam ton tam bar Memek parten la paba le nyande tobadam. Sonrab la tusan de shukwa le la trotso la mamomba duruzuru.
The second is the ground.
Tene peke jangen dan kejurve kejur nam ji chedo tsabate ne dadang kalesen ndengre te ni tene yanyam do tsache dong dadang ya bo zoku.
Now for the benefit of the translators and others who are studying Tibetan, I'm going to recite the root verses once myself, and then we will all recite them together. Those who can read the Tibetan, we will all recite them together. It's good for you to work on your pronunciation.
Somba. Telang parnje panni tekwa chimbun dodela tembe tsorjin yesepe depe jolan tamje to. Telang parnje panni tepa chimbu dodela tembe tsorjin yesepe depe jolan tamje to.
So, this whole section of the text gives us the description of what pure being is, but also of how to approach it, how to realize it. And it is not realized without a path. And the path is something that unfolds gradually. It unfolds in gradual steps. And the first two parts of the path are called accumulation and application. The path of accumulation is that the path of the beginner who is focusing mainly on the accumulation of merit, but partly also on the accumulation of wisdom through listening, reflecting, and meditating. The path of application is where the main emphasis is on the accumulation of wisdom, even though one is still accumulating merit. But here, on the path of application, one is dedicating oneself to listening, reflecting, and meditating on the ultimate nature, the meaning of non-conceptual wisdom, empty of any duality of perceived and perceiver. And through listening and reflecting and the meditation that one does on this path, one can verify for oneself what that means. One can get the picture of what non-conceptual wisdom, empty of perceived and perceiver, means. So when one has that verification of it, when one understands it through listening and reflecting and meditation, then one has accomplished this path of definitive verification.
Nyāsū nyūvā kāngi bāhu.
Rīpā yāndā tātū sī, tōngvē lāngjī ngūnsūm jī, sūrtū tējī mītūp jī, nyāsū nyūvā kāngi bāhu.
Tērī trāi.
Rīpā yāndā tātū sī, tōngvē lāngjī ngūnsūm jī, Sudu Deshin Yito Shin Yansun Yungwa Karyin Pao Rekpa Yamna Tato Shin Tongwe Lam Yin Nunsung Yin Sudu Deshin Yito Shin Yansun Yungwa Karyin Pao
Rekpa Kisavani Yurji Hirab Ji Jinle Jigtinlen Depe Yangta Batava Topse Tongol Lanchi Tengetan Mayimba Nyam Yado Wonsum Ji Sordo Yorte Yeni Tongbang Treme Taba Wondo Topjen Wonsum to Topjen Jitop to Yangta Bet Yang tabe tabe nyansu nyuma kanyin bao.
The fourth important point here is called encounter, which is... So this is the description of the encounter with pure being itself, called the path of vision, because here is where one sees pure being directly. Up until this point, one's meditation has been one involving conceptuality. That is to say, one doesn't know what pure being is. One has not had any experience of it, and therefore has to rely on the texts, on the explanations, on the logical analyses, and so on, in order to give one a picture of that ultimate nature. And it is that picture that one focuses on one-pointedly. Through listening and reflecting, one gradually clears up any doubts, any misunderstandings about it, and gives rise to certainty in one's understanding. And the meditation on the path of accumulation and application consists of resting in that certainty, particularly on the path of application. Through listening and reflecting, one gives rise to certainty in one's understanding of pure being, and then the meditation consists in resting in that certainty. So that is conceptual in character and has the picture created through the concepts as the object of meditation. What's happening here is that one's meditation has gradually refined the coarseness of the concepts that are needed in order to get the picture of pure being. They have become finer and finer until finally they become completely transparent and one is able to see pure being directly without relying on logic, on explanations, on descriptions. One is able to see that nature which... is beyond any description. And this occurs during meditative equipoise, since the meditation has these two phases of first meditative equipoise, where one focuses on it one-pointedly, and then post-meditation. And it is during meditative equipoise that the ultimate nature is seen directly on the path of vision. And then what happens after that, what is experienced after that encounter is described in the last line here. Whatever is experienced during the post-meditative state is then seen from the perspective of authentic view. That is to say, all phenomena are seen to be like illusion, like dream. As Nagarjuna expressed it in the text, the wisdom essential to the middle way, like a dream, like an illusion, like a city of Gandharvas, that's how birth, that's how living, and that's how dying are taught to be. So, let's sing that.
Sing a song.
Like a dream.
So here, pure being has been encountered directly, and what follows is not a realization of anything new, but a further deepening of the same realization that was gained on the path of vision, which is the first bodhisattva level. So the path of recollection occurs between the second and the tenth path, the second to the tenth bodhisattva levels, where that reality that has been seen, one then becomes accustomed to. It's like getting to know the country after you got the passport and got in. So in this connection, it might be good to sing the song of Milarepa about ultimate view, meditation, conduct, and fruition.
Tamje de yin ni dan. Nawa de yan ne jurba, ruba yin. De la de ye danito, neva zumba de jini, jama meba jurba. Tamje de jin ni sandu, nawa de yan ne jurba, ruba yin. Sunday, Lower Jetama, Mapper Jurbana, Nenan Nambakundo, Sungbaran Jorte, Chutamje, Tayeni Tamdo, Nawaina, Tela, Tayang Tite, Ne Jurba Yonzo Jobani, Jobaino, He, Nenjur Tam Satambuni Yujang, Tartoke, Sander.
The sixth point, so what is being described here is the level of Buddhahood, of complete awakening, and describes it as the ultimate transformation. It's relevant in this context to know that the word transformation here does not refer to the nature itself. One speaks of three stages of base, path, and fruition, or also called ground, path, and fruition. And the basic nature itself remains unchanged throughout all three phases of the ground, the path, and the fruition. So, why is it called a transformation? Because it is the path provides one with a complete elimination of all of the superficial stains that cover the basic nature over it and prevent one from experiencing it or seeing the world from that perspective. It's called a transformation here because consciousness, which is dualistic and experiences impure appearances, has been transformed into non-conceptual wisdom, which is completely pure in its essence and experiences pure appearances in a non-dualistic fashion. So that is why the term transformation is used. And what has the final result of this transformation is simply that the way things are and the way they appear to be have been brought into complete harmony with each other. Or as it's stated in the text here, being and appearance have been reconciled in every respect.
Now we're studying the verses that teach about the four paths. The path of, what did you say, application?
Accumulation and application.
Application. The path of application and the path of seeing and the path of cultivation or meditation and the path of no more training. These are the four paths. We just recited the root verses for each one. Now we're going to recite them again together in English. And then we're going to later have a test. So you should all study these verses and memorize them. And there's going to be a written exam. And those who are studying in English should be able to write the verses in English. And those who are studying in Tibetan will write the verses in Tibetan.
Then Lord Savatu Pekela, the Gugudon.
The translators have to write into that.
Then Yenda Kinjika.
And everybody else in English.
Yeah. Young Parinzake, then Jaminake in a young.
And you can also write in your native language if it is French or German.
Okay. Young Etaleke in a day.
In Italian.
Yata Chenazoton. Savat, Savat. Jola, Tona, Golam, Ya. Dang, take it and Yabuzonu, Tajolangri.
Yes, sir. So we will now recite these verses in English, starting with the verse on page 117, which is the verse related to the verse at the top of the page there is related to the path of application. The verse at the bottom of the page is related to the path of vision. Recite those two. Then the verse on the next page that's related to the path of meditation. And the verse on page 121 related to the path of no more learning.
Yeah. Chirtan chula chula chupa te duba tuba samba gomba somju goni chula chupa ta. Jeba chuchu chuyu goni chula chuchu te nyeyo bada. Chira nga so chawa.
Generally it's thought that in terms of performing dharma activity that there are three types of this activity, listening, reflecting and meditating. But an extensive presentation of 10 different kinds of Dharma activity is given in a text called Distinguishing the Middle from the Extremes.
The Jumjin Te Tunayang Chula Chobare Chutubare, then the Samnayang Chusambare Chula Chobare, Chute Nelo Gomnayang Chula Chobare, Tusan Gomzum Te Chula Chobare.
In general, listening, reflecting, and meditating are Dharma activities because when you listen, you're listening to Dharma teachings. When you're reflecting or analyzing, you're reflecting on those teachings. And when you're meditating on the abiding nature of reality as is described in those teachings.
Jeba chu 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 yu gu ni chu lu chu chu ni udan ta namban jeba li. Yigen Denju Jimba Dan, Nyenda Loda Lamba Dan, Chedan Katon Seba Dan, Tesem Padan Gombate, Chupate Chu Danine, Sunan Pompo Padome, Jesonde.
And this, the verse that describes
Lotava, Tabu Lotava, the text
called Distinguishing.
Bolan Chamja, Dun Chamu Hipata, the game of the
end of this, so please write it down.
Atara, say Atara, and Tabu Tabu.
Dharma activity is to actually write down the letters, to write down the words just like you're doing now. That is a Dharma activity that is an accumulation of.
Sang Dona Chicken, Goji.
Then if you give to others the ability to do the same thing, like in the ancient days if you gave paper or ink, writing materials, nowadays if you give books to others, give them the ability, computers, right? The ability to also write down the letters and to participate in these different activities, that's also an accumulation of merit. To make offerings is, for example, to offer to the three precious jewels texts like editions of the Kanjur, the Buddha's speech, or the Tantra, the commentaries on those teachings, the classic canon. You make offerings of those to the three precious jewels, and those are making offerings of the Dharma. Then, not only to write down the letters, but to listen. Listen to teachings about what you've written down, to read what you've written down, to read the Dharma. These are activities that are an accumulation of merit. To recite, so that you don't just listen to it once, and you don't just read it once, but you listen and read and recite again and again so you get it well in your mind. To explain it to others, what you understand. To memorize it, to learn it by heart.
Memorize.
So that you don't just need the book. You can recall it without having the book in front of you. It doesn't do you any good if you read it, but then when you put the book on the shelf, there's nothing left inside. You have to keep something inside of you that doesn't depend on necessarily having a book. To reflect, to analyze, so that you don't just accept without using your own intelligence what you've heard in a way that would be a blind type of faith, but rather you gain your own certainty in the meaning of what has been taught by analyzing it, and then you meditate on it. And the meditation is cultivating again and again the certainty that you gain through reflection. So that this certainty becomes, goes from being an intellectual certainty to an experience and realization ultimately. These 10 activities constitute an immeasurable accumulation of merit. And these, it's one reason that it's important, especially in the modern day, to know about these 10 activities, is that it's easy to come to the Dharma and think that because we've all spent a lot of time studying, that we think we don't want to study, we don't want to write down or do that type of thing. We want to just meditate. But what these 10 activities show is that in the Dharma itself, it's taught that from the very beginning, you need to engage in all of these activities that are the steps leading up to meditation if your meditation is going to be productive. And that all of these activities are different. They're different from worldly kinds of writing down and memorizing and so forth, because it's an accumulation of merit that helps you to remove the obscuration so that you can recognize the true nature of reality. So it performs a very important function.
Tene tanda charanso chikche taso yege lendrava te chuchu chu inanen tambore karchembore yabore hajan yabore.
Now you are writing down the words of the Dharma. This is the first Dharma activity. It is an accumulation of merit. It is good what you are doing. It is very good. It is excellent. It's an excellent accumulation of merit.
Tene yege te ya ka tan ten ju chu yege la tra na pen yon chen bo re ma do ta ga la yege li ba tan je pen yon yo ma.
We can see that it's not just talking about writing down anything that is of benefit, but to write down the words of the Dharma, the speech of the Buddha himself, and the commentaries on those teachings that the Buddha gave. That is an extraordinary thing to do. It is a wonderful accumulation of merit.
Tene etam bomla sobe, tsunji yige trabatam, dravun durya ke tapji yige trabatasu, tene nyeba chenbuda. Semjinla nabilegar.
If on the other hand, you write down the formula for the atomic bomb, you write down ways of killing your enemies in order to protect your friends, those types of documents are dangerous. They are harmful to others. Now let's recite this verse together.
Yeah, together. Hebajaku.
I have been teaching for 26 years. I'm not going to teach anymore. I'm going to give the reading transmissions. I'm not going to give the explanations. Explanations will be given by the old, old, great, great translators.
Oh, yeah. De talonen gotura, karma julen la, nga lo mambu hevara, tanda hegumare, kejur koransu hegum.
I'm starting this tradition this year. Like at Karma Killing, for example, which is a course where I taught for many years, I'm not going to give the explanations. The translators have to give the explanations. That's how it is.
Keep this well in your mind.
Yeah, Tang. And
now Walker will give a little explanation of his trip to the 24 sacred places of Chakra Samara.
Yeah.
Recently, Rinpoche asked me to go to some of the 24 places of Chakra Samara. These are places that are sacred to the Tantric tradition and our special places for a meditation deity, Chakrasambhara Kempo located these places in Vermont at Kermit Scholing. They can be found anywhere. But originally, first place is all over the Indian subcontinent. From Tibet, Mount Malaya in Sri Lanka, from Swat Valley in Pakistan to Sumatra. So Kempo sent me to some of these places. And the first place I went after meeting His Holiness Karmapa in Dharamsala was a place called Jalandhara, which is a town.
Jalandhara.
Hillside town. And there is a temple there called the Mahavijayaswari Temple, which is about the size of a city block. And a Hindu temple, but for a long time the Buddhists and the Hindus practiced there together. They were quite interested that I had come there as a Westerner to practice because they had not seen many come for more than just a moment there. And Kempo, prior to my departure, asked that I do this pilgrimage in white robes. So they, the Indians noticed me immediately. So this temple is a big courtyard with black and white marble squares, and in the middle of it there's a tall vaulting temple to this goddess Mahavijayaswari, and in the back of the temple are these two, and behind it there are these two small temples, white buildings, maybe 8 feet high.
One is a
lingam,
Lingam is the
masculine principle in Hinduism, so it looks like the symbol that. And this lingam every day has a yellow substance put on it, and then a big blue smile. It's kind of a blue smiling face. So every day, twice a day for a week, I would go and sit down and sing Milarepa songs and do a short sadhana that Jogyam Trungpa Rinpoche wrote in front of this lingam in its little house. In these places, you meet unusual people sometimes. And in my last session, I was singing some verses of Conduct by Milarepa, and I looked up, and there was a sadhu in front of me.
Sadhu.
Chuba.
Hindu sadhu.
And as I looked up, he was standing in front of me going... Seeing Lori the song, and then he turned around and went. Asking me for an offering. And so this is the first place. And it's a very peaceful, wonderful place to practice. Kempo said it's the main Chakrasambhara place. After that, I had been joined by my friend Ted, who just came out of a 3-year retreat and also wore white. And Ted is almost as big as me.
White?
And
Pomokam.
And we went to Kulu.
White?
There's a mountain called Mahadev in North India, which means Mahadev is Shiva, which usually is lightning. And this place has a lingam also on top in a temple that every year the lingam on this hill's mountaintop is exploded by lightning, and the Hindu priests repair it with butter. Then they do many prayers, and it becomes full again. So Ted and I had heard this, and we got to this town, and people kept telling us, you can't go up there. There's lots of snow. You can't go there. But we went and took a jeep up and walked up this mountainside. It's about 1,000 stone steps through a little hillside town with fruit groves, and then you go through these pine woods with big pine trees. And we got up on top, and there was snow on the top of this mountain, and you can see the Himalayas, other short Himalayas, the foothills, which are about 8,000 feet around you. And so we climbed up and started walking toward the temple, and there were angry-looking priests in wool jackets, and they had shawls on and big canes, the kind of canes that policemen wear, and they beat you. And they were standing perimeter around the temple. And Ted and I walked, and we wanted to go to the temple toward them. So we asked them, can we go to the temple? And they kept saying no. And every time Ted and I made any gesture to step toward the temple, they would grip their canes more tightly. And there were some young men with ropes that stood near the two or three pujaris, the priests who were talking to us. Meanwhile, there were some other Indian pilgrims who were making snowmen. Unusual. So they kept saying they wouldn't explain why we couldn't come close. So Ted and I sat down on a rock and started to do our prayers. They wouldn't even let us circumambulate around the temple or anything. But finally, these four very extremely beautiful Indian women arrived, walking up, one of them barefoot, and they all spoke English. They were from different places in the world, and started talking to the priest, and someone else was also talking to the priest. And what had happened was the lingam had recently been struck by lightning, and so they were doing prayers, and they didn't want anyone to come near the lingam while they were doing the prayers. So we thought this was very good and auspicious. We had also been told a story from a Buddhist at a restaurant in a town called Sopema nearby, who said that the Buddhists say that Chakrasambhara was chasing Shiva through through India. Shiva hid on this mountain and disguised himself as Vajrayogini, Chakrasambhara's girlfriend, and Chakrasambhara knew this and came close to Shiva and then cut off his vajra. And then Shiva had a lot of pain and said, please give me back my vajra. And Chakrasambhara said, no, you must go meditate at Ankara. So that's the Buddha story. So we felt it was a very good time. That's day. So then we went to Sri Lanka and climbed Mount Malaya, which is many of these places are sacred to many traditions, and besides us, the Buddhists, the Theravada Buddhists also hold it sacred, as well as the Hindus, the Muslims, and the Christians, because there's a big footprint on the top that the Buddha made, and the Hindus say Shiva made it. The Muslims say Adam made it, and the Christians say Thomas the Apostle made it. But the Buddhists take care of it. The Buddhists have a little shrine nearby. This mountain if you go very quickly, can take about 2 hours of continuous climbing on granite steps to climb. It's in the jungle, and it again is about 8,000 feet high. So you maybe 50 or 100 years ago, it would be very dangerous to go because there's cobras and lots of leeches in the jungle. But now you can go, and they have lights, so the snakes don't like to come on the stairs at night. It's best to climb at night because it's so hot there. So it's only maybe 70 or 80 degrees in December. But it can be very crowded. We went at a time when it wasn't crowded. If it's crowded, it can take a few hours just to go 10 meters, because they have 10,000 people a day coming. So you climb up to the top, and if you come at night, the sun comes up in the morning, and it pierces through the clouds, and you cannot tell what's a cloud and what's a mountain at first. They're just these amazing shadows. And then if you look behind on the mountain, you'll see that the shape of the mountain on the cloud cover that's below will cut a perfect triangle. And it's very beautiful, and there are many Sri Lankans who've grown up at night who are shivering because they've never been in such a cold place. It's about 50 degrees. It's like here at the top of the mountain. They're all shivering because it's so hot in Sri Lanka. So it's a very beautiful and magical place. And so that was the third place we went. It's called Sri Pada. It's the mountainous Malaya.
Sri Pada.
Then we went to the southern tip of India to a place called Rameshwaram. It's the very southernmost point of India. It's very flat. It seems hotter than Sri Lanka. There's not a lot of forest growing there. And it's a very poor beach town, but this Shiva, it's a Shiva place at this flat town that also has about 10,000 people a day coming there, just busloads coming down. And the main feature in this town is this temple, which is about the size of six city blocks made of these huge pieces of granite. And there's one, it's like the temple is a giant maze of places, and there's one corridor that's 800 meters long of columns, if you can imagine something that long with lions perfectly identical going all the way down. There are lots, the main thing about this temple is water, and there are all of these wells in different places around the temple. So there are all these Hindus running around getting blessings from water poured on them, and they're soaking wet, running around with men with buckets, following them to get the water. And there's, you know, groups and families, and everyone's covered in water, and the dark hallways have bats flying around. And the quarters are so big that sometimes you'll see a farm tractor that's this high, or an elephant. In the innermost part, there are all of these sadhus who are just in white loincloths, and you have Brahmin's threads on and their heads shaven, and it almost feels like you're in this primordial sacred spot that is just, it's very, you have no sense of your culture. At least I had no sense of my culture when I came in. And they stopped us at the door and said, you can't come in here, Hindus only. And I said, we do a meditation like, that's like Shiva, and they looked at me and said, okay, you can come. And then, after that, we went up to Assam, Guwahati in Assam, the Kamakhya Temple, which is pitched on a mountainside. There's a whole town complex around this temple, which has a black central dome. And then there are two kind of red buildings connected to it, and a porch where they do continuous animal sacrifices there. This is in Assam, in the east, more in the east of India, in the north.
The name?
Kamakhya is the mandir, is the name of the temple. And this place, you have many animal sacrifices that happen there. Ted and I sat under these large trees on a stone embankment with these stone stair kind of embankment right next to the temple, and sang the Lorinda songs and in the morning, and below us we would see a priest chopping the heads off of animals. It was a very strange place to practice compared to where we normally practice. At one moment, also, a friend found this most poignant thing in the description I wrote, is I was singing the words, whatever I do, it fits with Dharma, and that puts me in a state of delight. And I was looking down the stairs, and there was this dog sitting there, straight in the eye. So there was a strange... all the pujaris, the priests at the different temples, seem to have different uniforms, so to speak, different things that they wear. And here, they all dress in blood-red outfits, just blood-red saris and so forth. There were also women and men priests there. Most every other place we've seen so far, there weren't any female priests, but they seem to be inside this temple as much as the men.
And there also the priests would sit in these little special nooks all around the temple, and they would lay out their rupees in these, in like a quilt, a big, you know, because people, this is how they make their living, and they would make these hot squares of rupees in front of them as a way of reminding you. And usually if you, they'd say, ring this bell, and you would go to do, and you'd ring a bell, and they'd go, okay, now. Ben and I also had an unusual experience there. I had a strange dream the night before of meeting a parrot. There were many parrots, and one of these parrots had an identical matching hat and coat, and the parrot had these beautiful eyes looking at me. And the next day, we were practicing, and we sat down under the tree, and this lady, woman priest, came over to us and was in this red outfit, but she also had this red hat on. And she looked at Ted and me and became overjoyed and spun in a circle, which I think is a practice they do under trees sometimes, and then sat down by us and just wanted to listen to us sing. And she only spoke to us in gestures, in elaborate gestures. She didn't say a word. Ted and I later figured out that she was mute. And she would just do all of these elaborate sign language, and we would nod. And she had a begging, sometimes people have these begging tin cups, and hers was just filled with fresh, fat, yellow marigolds. She was a very kind of magical lady, and she had her eye makeup just like huge curls and extra tikkas on her head. So we didn't know what to do, but she was very happy. And so we sang, and she would smile. And we sat there, these two husbands came by with these three little boys, and they wanted a photo with us. So they sat these three boys in front of us. People often wanted photos with us. So these two boys are sitting there, and she's trying to entertain them with signs, and they're rigid as little poles. And then the guys noticed they didn't have any film. So they left, almost completely left us. I mean, one went to get film, the other walked about 50 yards away to talk to the wives that they had come with, farther away than we'd ever leave it in the West, for 20 minutes. And the boys just sat in front of us and then the lady from Jari would accept money from us, but after they took the picture, I said, now I want money from you. And they looked at us like, you want money from us? I said, yes. And then I said, but you give it to her. And then this other Indian who was sitting beside me then became our guard and said, give her the money now. The next place we went was Shravasti, which, as you know, is the place that the Buddha did his rainy season retreats. Someone described it quite eloquently as it's the place the Buddha did his most intensive practice after his enlightenment, which is to be a nice way to put it. And so it's just this beautiful park in North India, in the plains. And it's very well manicured and peaceful. We stayed the night before at the Korean temple, and there's right out the window, there's a 100-foot-tall stupa under construction at the Tibetan Nyingma Center. And there was a wonderful Korean priest there who seemed quite realized to be around. And a local magistrate came over to argue with him about politics and religion for about an hour. And this huge group of Indians that were very devoted to this Korean monk sat around. And the Korean monk would say things to this magistrate. They were good friends, like, well, look out there, and point up in the dark sky, and he'd say, what color is that? And the magistrate would be like, this is not what I'm talking about. So the next thing, we were able to practice in Shravasti, and we got to the Buddha's meditation hut, And there were all of these Indian Theravadins sitting there in their morning meditation quietly. And so we sat with them for a while, and then some of them came up and asked me to make change for them with the American money they've been given over the years. So I wound up with 33 $1 bills that day. And then we went into the inner cell after they left and started practicing, and two little Indian boys came and were really watching us. And the mantra in this sadhana is very easy. Om, om, om. So we were sitting there, the little boys came near us, and we asked them to come closer, and then we got them to say, om, 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 with us. So they kept looking at us like we were crazy. Very wonderful, peaceful spot. Then we went to Mount Abu in Rajasthan, about 100 kilometers from the border to Pakistan. And it's a mountain that they say is the same kind of rock as the Himalayas, like around Kailash. It's this small mountain range that's just erupted in the middle of the plain. There's a beautiful lake there, and in the middle of the lake there's a lingam-shaped rock that has arisen. There's pedal boats you can rent. And by that time, we had been joined by our friend Christine McCutcheon, who was also wearing white. And we hired a giant white swan pedal boat and pedaled around this pond together, singing and doing the sadhana. One thing about Mount Abu was that the air was very clear. And if you traveled in India, you know that many places have known for very dirty air. And this place was completely clear. It was like being on an island in the middle of the sky. There were kind of palm trees at the end of this village. And beyond them was just blue sky. So you felt you were on this island, on this hill. And there's lots of tigers and things, or bears that will eat you in the forest, so you have to be careful. There are lots of vacationers there. It's the there's a lot of alcohol, apparently, and people come from Gujarat, which there is no alcohol, to party. So it's a very, very wonderful place, and there are caves as well. It's quite fun. The final place we went was the site of Godavari in the Kathmandu Valley. It's a small temple on the south side of the Kathmandu Valley, and there's a little forest that just drifts down to a white man-made embankment and a tiny pond with fish swimming in it, and you can just sit in the sun and sing and watch this procession of I think a nunnery was, it was just after Losar, and there were lots of nuns one day there. They have a big mirror, so the Tibetan nuns would put the tikkas on and then check in the mirror to make sure to get a tikka. And so we sang there, and there was a quite delightful lady pujari who would come over and constantly ask for money cheerfully and then bring enormous amounts of water for us to drink, because the water there is from the it's the sacred fluids of Vajrayogini. So it's quite delicious. We drank a lot, and she would want to pour the water on us, and she did this for no one else, but she was very happy to just pour a lot of water on us. So I highly recommend going to these places. They're quite easy to get to now.
We're going to sing the song of the eight kinds of happiness, eight wonderful forms of happiness.
Amen.
to win her soul.
Chenpa song. Chenpa song jena lo lo yo en Chenpa song.
Chenpa song.
Chenpa song lo lo tang to go. Dung se nai chang sang tang.
Dung di, dung be na tini sing be na. Dung be yang be na tini sing be na.
Seven.
May we